In essay number 2, we went through a number of the sections in which he deals with the significance and the importance of Eretz Israel, to the point where the king asks him, if so, the fact that you are not in Eretz Israel today means that you have not fulfilled that which God wants of you, to which Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi had responded in very honest fashion, Hovashtani Melech Kuzar, you have shamed me, king of the Khazars, you're right, it was a terrible mistake. Jews should have gone back en masse in the days of Ezra and Nehemiah, and because we didn't, the second temple, the second commonwealth, was doomed to destruction ultimately. The Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi at the end, we went from section 2 all the way to the very end of the Sefer, and the Chatimat HaSefer, you know, I even lost track what page it is in the, I don't have my English edition here today, but at the end of the Sefer, it says that the Chaver decided that he wants to go to Eretz Israel. He's going to go to Eretz Israel. And the king is upset. First of all, the king doesn't want to lose the presence of the Chaver, and he tells him, listen, what point is there going there? The divine presence isn't there anymore, to which the Chaver, the Talmud Chacham, says, well, the divine presence that is clearly revealed before the eyes isn't there, but there is the divine presence of God is always there. Then he makes a halachic comment. The halachic comment is that though there is danger in traveling to Eretz Israel, he says that danger should not stand in one's way, first of all, because we have to define what's considered danger that would therefore dictate that one should not undertake the journey to Eretz Israel. So he says the definition would be is if people would not travel for business, then you have no business traveling for a mitzvah. Did you like that sentence? Wasn't that so nice? If people would not travel for business, then you have no business traveling for a mitzvah. You got it now? Pretty good, okay. But I can't rest on my laurels. We have to continue with the rest of the shiur. So the Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi is making an extremely important comment. He's making an extremely important comment, and he says, certainly, even if one, because of his great love for Eretz Israel, does wish to undertake a perilous journey, and that he wants to get to Eretz Israel so that ultimately he should receive atonement for his sins, let him go under those circumstances as well. Because he says, it certainly is no worse, or for that matter, a great deal better than all the peoples in the world who go out to war in order to achieve the glory of battle and endanger their lives for glory. This person who's going to Eretz Israel is ready to endanger his life for the fulfillment of a mitzvah, to be close to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, to receive atonement for his sins. That's a great deal different than the kind of things that people risk their lives for. So when we reach this point, I decided that it may be worthwhile to take you on a bit of a journey that is an extremely important journey. Because Rabbi Yehuda HaLevi has made it absolutely clear that there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Israel, even if it entails a dangerous and an arduous journey. That's all. There's a mitzvah to go. Mitzvah to go. This has been, of course, a matter of great debate over the course of the last few hundred years, and certainly in the course of the last 100 years. But it's a great debate that I want to bring it down to its essential points. And the essential points are on this sheet that I gave you last week, of which I made more copies and they're available at the door. There are two opinions. It's one sheet there. There are two opinions. And the two opinions are the ones that are quoted by all of those who hold that there is no mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, or those who in general are opposed to the idea of living in Eretz Yisrael. Unfortunately, there are such. It's very interesting that these two sources, by the way, were not quoted by most Rishonim and Achronim for hundreds of years. And they sort of were picked up out of anonymity about 100 years ago. And, it's amazing. I speak with, over the years, you know, I meet up with all sorts of people. Unless I'm usually want to say, you know, I mind my own business. But these ideas keep coming up in conversation. There are those who know nothing about the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael except for the two sources that are listed here on this page. The top one is Da'at Rab Chaim Cohen, the opinion of Rab Chaim Cohen in Tosfos at the end of Ksubas. And we went through it, and I will just review in a moment what Rab Chaim Cohen in Tosfos said. And the second is the one we're up to, the Megillat Esther and the opinion of the Rambam. Now, when I say the Megillat Esther, we're not talking about that which we read on Purim. There is a sefer called Megillat Esther that was written by somebody called Reb Yitzchok Leon. Not even sure precisely when it was written. And of all the fascinating things, there was a giant, a great Talmud Chacham in the days of the Rabbi Yosef Karo, 16th century Eretz Yisrael, who was Rabbeinu Yitzchok Di Leon. One is Rabbeinu Yitzchok Leon, and the other is Rabbeinu Yitzchok Di Leon. The giant is Rabbeinu Yitzchok Di Leon. The one about whom we know very little is Rabbi Yitzchok Leon, who, according to the Chidah, is the one who in fact wrote the Megillat Esther. That makes a big difference. There are some people who quote the Megillat Esther as Hagon Hagadol, Moreinu V'Rabbeinu, Rav Yitzchok Di Leon says in the Megillat Esther. He didn't write the Megillat Esther. It's Rav Yitzchok Leon. That's number one. Not the same person. Well, I imagine the reason why he wrote a sefer called Megillat Esther is because this sefer, let me give you a little background. Where does it appear? The Rambam, his introduction to his great work, the Yad HaChazaka, his introduction to his magnum opus, is the Sefer HaMitzvot. The Sefer HaMitzvot is a Sefer in which, first of all, he establishes the 14 points of the Rambam. What is considered a mitzvah that should be listed amongst the 613, and there are differences of opinion? And on the listing of the Rambam, the Ramban disagrees. He says that there are a number of positive commandments that should have been inserted by the Rambam that he did not. There are negative commandments that the Rambam should have listed that he didn't. Now, there is a perush, a commentary on the Sefer HaMitzvahs called Megillat Esther. The purpose of the Megillat Esther really is to fend off the attacks of the Ramban, Nachmanides, against Maimonides. So he wants to reveal the hidden ideas behind what the Rambam wrote. So here, there's a famous Ramban. A very famous Ramban. I don't have the Ramban for you here, but you can trust me. the Ramban in positive commandment number 4 that the Rambam should have listed, and the Ramban disagrees with it, so you should have listed it. That mitzvah is the mitzvah in all times and at all places. Is there a mitzvah to conquer Eretz Yisrael? Not to leave it in the hands of the nations of the world? To work the land? To build it up? The Ramban says this is a mitzvah asay from the Torah for all time. The Rambam didn't list the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, of living in Eretz Yisrael. So there's a great deal of literature about why the Rambam didn't write a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. I'm going to leave the real meaning in the Rambam yet for a little while, but what I want to get to is the Megillat Esther comes to the defense of the Rambam. Why didn't the Rambam write the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? His position is going to be, because the Rambam holds it's not a mitzvah. Not only is it not a mitzvah, there may even be, get ready for this, there may even be a shtikel aveira involved in living on earth. But wait till the shiur is over. Wait. Don't do anything hastily. So you can understand, therefore, why the Megillat Esther became an extremely important source for those who are opposed to the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. So I want to take you through the Megillat Esther and give you a number of the statements that had been made by Gedolei Yisrael over a period of 400 years about this Megillat Esther. And I still keep hearing the Megillat Esther. For that matter, the Megillat Esther is even quoted by Rabbi Ovadia Yosef in his responsa, in which he says you are permitted to give territory for peace, a responsa that was very, very popular throughout the world 10 years ago, which he rescinded about a year ago. I remember, I don't think that was a conservative or reform rabbi in the United States of America that didn't know Rabbi Joseph's responsa. Now, it's the Israeli government at the time made sure that everybody got a copy of Rabbi Avadi Yosef's tshuva. Right. He even quotes the Megillat Esther. So we have to know what the Megillat Esther said and what is the view of the overwhelming majority of Gedolei Yisrael. And you're going to see what a fascinating study this is. And as I started saying, I still have young people who come to the house, and you know, and I talk to them about the mitzvah and say, what are you talking about? Rabbi Chaim Kayan and Taisus. I don't Megillat Esther. I don't think they could even find the Megillat Esther. They couldn't even find where it is. They don't know who wrote it. Doesn't make any difference. But these are the two sources. And these two sources are clearly at odds with Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzari. That's why we're learning it. Okay. It may lead us in a number of other directions, but meanwhile, Rab Chaim Kayin in Taisus, we learned last week. Briefly, it's at the end of Masechet Ketubot where the Mishnah says husband or wife may coerce one another to go on Aliyah. And if the partner doesn't want to go, if it's the wife who doesn't want to go, the husband may give her a divorce and need not pay her ketubah. She forfeits her ketubah. If it's the husband who does not want to go on Aliyah, then the husband has to give the wife a divorce and must pay her ksuba in full. The fact is that there was a question that was sent to the Rambam about somebody where this kind of a question came up before Bet Din, and there was a suspicion that one of the partners over here may not be saying the truth. It may very well be a husband or a wife who just wants to get a divorce and then says, I want to go on Aliyah, and he doesn't want to go. She doesn't want to go. So the Rambam makes it very clear that the halacha indeed and in fact is that husband or wife can coerce one another in going on Aliyah, but you have to be very, very careful. very, very careful to investigate and find out and make sure that there are no ulterior motives over here. In other words, for example, if the husband wants to go on Aliyah and he's been a member of Mizrahi Mavdal for 100 years and he's been talking about going on Aliyah, and then finally he brings his wife to court, to the bed, and says, "I wanted all my life to go on Aliyah," and she just doesn't want to go. Or you can have it the other way around. She is extremely active in Emunah. And he's a member of the Torah Karta, and she wants to go on Aliyah, and he doesn't want to go. Or, for example, what happens if he's a member of the Torah Karta, and he demonstrates against Israel in The Hague, you understand? And then one day, he comes to Besdin and he says, "Hey, I want to go on Aliyah, and my wife doesn't want to go." So you know, of course, that this guy is pulling a fast one. Bedin has to be very careful to see that they have in front of them people who are honest and serious and sincere, and if yes, then the halacha is that one can coerce the other. So there were two statements made by Tosfos. The Tosfos, one statement is that the idea of coercing a spouse to go on Aliyah does not apply today because traveling is dangerous. Husband or wife cannot coerce one another to undertake such an arduous and such a dangerous trip. Now, that first statement of Tosfos means that there is a mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. And husband and wife could coerce one another, except that at that particular moment in time, the circumstances were different. So what would happen, according to that statement in Tosfos, if the circumstances would change? And one could travel without undue danger to Eretz Yisrael, there would be a mitzvah. All right. There's a second statement in Tosfos that Rabbeinu Chaim says, "Achshav eino mitzvah, now there is no mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, because there are so many mitzvahs that you have to perform in Eretz Yisrael, and we can't do it. Truma, and Meiser, and Meiser Sheni, and Meiser Oimli, and Leket, and Shikha, and Peya, and Orla. There are so many mitzvahs that we can't fulfill them." Of course, we pointed out that so many say, what do you mean, even those living at the time of the Balei Tosfos said, "What do you mean? Why can't we fulfill the mitzvahs? You go to Eretz Yisrael, you buy yourself a piece of land, and you fulfill the mitzvahs. What's wrong?" And if you have a shayla, you ask a chav. I mean, and can you imagine? I mean, the breadth of Torah that has been opened up in Eretz Yisrael. I always love shaylas when I get shaylas on mitzvot atluyot baaretz. Nobody in West Hempstead ever asked me a shayla about Truma or Meiser or Shemitah, or many of the shaylas that I had from my young men in shul, who seems a whole bunch of them were called up on Purim Day, the 14th. They had to return to their bases. So now, where do they keep? They live in Yerushalayim. Where are they going to keep Purim? Do they keep Purim the 14th? Or do they keep Purim the 15th? Nobody ever asked me a shaila like that in Chutz Laretz. Right? I've had shailas already from students calling from their bases about a problem in the kitchen, a problem with the Erev around the camp, different kind of things that they're called upon to do on Shabbos. Ein l'hamin. So we deal with it. We deal with it. So therefore, there are those who say Rabbeinu Chaim simply not acceptable. There's even more. There's even more. What's even more is that there are Rishonim who usually quote what Tosfos paskins, and all of those who usually do this, not a single one quotes Rabbeinu Chaim. Not the Rosh, not the Maharam Mirutenberg, and all of them. So it even reaches the point where one of the Rishonim says that what's written in Tosfos over here, and by the way, it's the most unusual statement of all, to make a statement that some student who made a mistake inserted this into Tosfos. It's an extremely dangerous position to take, and Chachmei Yisrael, the wise men of Israel, would not have taken a position like that unless it was absolutely mandated. You know, you can't go ahead and say, well, there's a line in Tosis that was inserted by somebody else, you know. But here, the overwhelming majority of Rishonim and Achronim, all the way coming down to the some Sefer, to the Avnei Nezer, they all say, all right, that's the story with Rav Chaim Kohen. So if anybody starts up with you with Rav Chaim Kohen, just say, rubbish. That's it. It's not a position, it's not a position that is used l'halacha. Doesn't appear any place in Shulchan Aruch. No place in Shulchan Aruch. The second and more problematic is the Megillat Esther. Now, just have patience. We're going to go through it, and we'll make all sorts of comments. Megillat Esther, Nidali, third line. From here till the end, these are the words of the Megillat Esther. And there are a number of essential points, and we'll take it point by point. Nidali, he says, it seems to me, Kima Shalom Minoor HaRav, the reason why the Rambam, the Rav, did not list, count the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael as one of the 613 mitzvot. The reason is Lefisha mitzvat Yerushat Haaretz v'Yeshivatah lo nahagad rak b'mei Moshe v'Yoshua v'David. You know why he doesn't list the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael? Because the mitzvah applied only during the times of Moshe, Yehoshua, and David. And as long as they didn't go into exile, after they went into exile from upon their land, this mitzvah does not apply for all generations until the coming of the Mashiach. That's statement number one. The Megillat Esther says the reason why the Rambam does not list living in Eretz Yisrael as a mitzvah taseh, because it only applied in the days of Yehoshua, David, and as long as the Beit HaMikdash stood. After that, it's not going to apply again until Moshiach comes. There's an unbelievable fallacy in this statement. An unbelievable fallacy. You know what the fallacy is? You know what the problem is? There is something that sets apart the Rambam's great work of the Yad HaChazaka from our Shulchan Aruch. You know what the main difference between our Shulchan Aruch and what the Rambam's code is? The Rambam in his code lists all of the mitzvahs of all times, even though they don't apply today. For example, the Rambam lists the mitzvah of building the Beit HaMikdash, bringing all of the various sacrifices. These are all mitzvahs. We're talking about hundreds of mitzvahs that don't apply today and will not apply until the Mashiach comes. And despite that, the Rambam lists them. You can't say about the Rambam that the Rambam doesn't list the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, because at the present it is not a mitzvah that we can fulfill. That can't apply to the Rambam, because the Rambam does in fact list all of the mitzvahs, even if they don't apply. And if they applied in the past and they will apply in the future, the Rambam should have listed it. So this is not a defense of the Rambam. It simply can't be said. You can't even say the words out of your mouth. And by the way, what does it mean? Even according to Megillat Esther, that it was a mitzvah that applied in the days of Yehoshua and David, and as long as the Beit HaMikdash existed, and then it will become a mitzvah again in the days of Mashiach. So that means, that doesn't mean that it's not a mitzvah now. It means it is a mitzvah now, but we can't fulfill it. For example, somebody gives the following example. If nobody of Amalek exists in the world, then there is no mitzvah anymore to destroy Amalek. What happens if we don't know who Amalek is? We can't fulfill the mitzvah because we don't know who's Amalek. We're not going to be, you know, machmer and say, well, that guy looks like Amalek, he smells like Amalek, so he must be Amalek. if somebody, if I don't know who's Amalek, so that means the mitzvah to kill Amalek applies, except that I cannot fulfill it now because I don't know. If we say that the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael applied once and will apply again, it doesn't mean there's no mitzvah. Of course there's a mitzvah, except for whatever reason it doesn't apply now. Which means the Rambam had to have listed it. If the Rambam didn't list it, there has to be another reason for it. Let's go to point number two. This is probably the most difficult one of all. Ki adrabba. He says, not only is living in Eretz Yisrael not a mitzvah today, it's an aveira. Adrabba, just the opposite. Nitztaveinu, we've been commanded. Lefi masha amru b'sof ketubot, what the Gemara says at the end of ketubot, shelo nimrod b'umot, that we should not rebel against the nations of the world, v'lechet lichbosh et ha'aretz b'chazka, to go conquer the land with strength. V'hochicho, and the Gemara proves it from a pasuk, hishbati etchem b'not Yerushalayim. In Shir HaShirim, there are three, and then there's a fourth similar pasuk that says, hishbati etchem b'not Yerushalayim, I have administered an oath to you, daughters of Jerusalem, that you shall not arouse, shelo to'iru v'lo to'oruru et ha'ahava ad shet techpats, you shall not arouse the love between God and the Jewish people until he will want. And Rav Zeira in the Gemara says the following. These represent three oaths, better known as the Shalosh Shvuos or the Shulish Shvias. The three oaths. And the three oaths are, one, that we shall not rebel against the nations of the world. And Rashi there says, Lo la'alod b'choma, not to go up to Eretz Yisrael en masse. We don't have a right to go up to Eretz Yisrael en masse. Another one of the oaths is that the nations of the world should not enslave us or cause us more pain than is necessary. So the Gemara is saying that there was an oath administered to the Jewish people that we're not permitted to go up en masse to Eretz Yisrael to conquer it. Not allowed to conquer it. That means if there are those, Tzionists and others, who come up over here to conquer the land, this is considered a rebellion against God. That was the Shita of Munkach and Satma, based on the Shalosh Shvuas, the three oaths. The amount of literature that's written on the three oaths, I can't begin to tell you. We'll just give a little bit of the three oaths. Number one, the three oaths do not appear in any code of Jewish law. Don't appear in any code of Jewish law. Now, I didn't tell you all three. One is Shelo Yalu Bechoma. They shall not go up en masse. One is Shelo Yimdedu B'umot Olam. That they shouldn't rebel. In other words, if we're living in the United States or in any other country, we're supposed to be good citizens. We're supposed to be good citizens. We're not the ones what never take. What do you think happened to Jews in Stalinist or Leninist Russia? Jews who became erased Bolsheviks or whatever they were. It brought mamish to a decimation of the Jewish population over there. Rebellions going on. Unfortunately, Jews have been in the forefront of so many of them. Chazal were absolutely right. Mind your own business. Right? That's another sentence with the word business in it. Jews were always told we have to be good citizens wherever we are. Unless, of course, we're living in a dictatorial society. We don't have to, we don't have to be good citizens in Hitler Germany. So number one, by the way, it was always good advice to Jews. Don't be the big rebels. I told it to a number of people. Who was in the forefront of the struggle against the Vietnam War in the United States? Jews. Jews. Now, the struggle against the Vietnam War, so I remember one of the great, great leaders in the battle against the American government, against Lyndon Johnson, and then against Nixon, was one of the members in my shul in West Hempstead. And I had members of my shul that have guaranteed me a place in the world to come. And I said, I don't know, you know, there are 220 million goyim in America, and there are 5 million Jews. You know, Jews have to lay low. That amongst the 220 million Americans, more by now, there must be people of morality and honesty and decency. This is the battle that they have to fight. We can't afford to fight that battle because we need to have a government that is going to work on behalf of the state of Israel. We have to save all of our political clout in order to assist Jews. All right, Fregnicht. I got the works for that. I get the works in the press all over. That there was a 28-week struggle between myself and this member of my shul in the in one of the newspapers in America. Right, we're not going to go into that. Civil rights movement. In other words, our young people became the conscience of America. Now it's fine, but now we've been repaid, not in kind, by the blacks in the United States. Right. It was always good advice not to rebel against the nations of the world. The fact is, it was always good advice that we should not be foolhardy enough and raise an army and come up to conquer Eretz Israel, because we couldn't do it, and the few people that did it, and there were a few in history who attempted, were killed. There's a third oath. The third oath is that the nations of the world should treat us with a degree of decency. So now those who are opposed to establishing a state or coming up on Mars territory will say, Lo yalu b'choma, you're not allowed to come up on Mars. The number of responses to this, and this is what the Megillat Esther is saying now, not only is there no mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael today, Adarabah, it's usur, you can't live here now, you can't come up to Eretz Yisrael. So now you can already figure out a number of the responses. The classic response is, what happens if the nations of the world give you permission? What happens if the nations of the world give you permission? Interesting that the Ramban wrote 700-800 years ago that our third return to Eretz Israel is going to be with the permission of the nations of the world. The League of Nations did it, and the UN did it, and that was an act it was a miracle. Rav Soloveitchik, in his great essay Kol Dodi Dofeik, says, who do you think sat in that session of the United Nations in Lake Success that day when they voted for the partition of Eretz Israel? I still remember as a little boy listening to it. I think it was by Yugoslavia that we had a majority for the partition. All right, that's when all joy broke loose. The Ramban said that when we return to Eretz Israel for the third time, it's going to be with the permission of the nations of the world. The Vilna Gaon said the same thing 250 years ago. So it was approved by the League of Nations. It was approved by the United Nations. A few hours later, when the United Nations gechapped what they did, they wanted to vote all over again. But it was too late. So many, many Rishonim and Acharonim say that if it's with the permission of the nations of the world, then there is no rebellion against the nations of the world, and there's no prohibition on going up b'choma, going up on Mars. Then, of course, there are those who also write that these three oaths are interdependent. When are we obligated not to rebel and not to go up to take Eretz Yisrael forcefully, if the nations of the world treat us with decency. After a Shoah, we have a responsibility. In other words, these are mutual oaths. If they keep their part of the bargain, then we have to keep our part of the bargain. If they don't keep their part of the bargain, we are under no obligation. At the moment in history when we needed Eretz Yisrael more than anything else, or the gates of the whole world are closed to us, and Eretz Yisrael is closed. In addition, we have mentioned not a single sefer of halacha quotes the Shavuos. You know why? Because one has to know that there's a big difference between good advice, halacha in Talmud, and agada, that which is non-halachic in nature. Because if you want to get down to it, who administered these oaths? When was it administered? How was it done? Do you know of any point at which the Jewish people were called together, raise your right hand and accept this oath? Do you know of any time when the nations of the world took an oath not to enslave us more than anything, more than would be necessary? There's no such thing. In other words, it's an agadic, say, rabbinic good advice that is couched in agadic terminology that has absolutely no force of halacha. So to go ahead and say that because of the three oaths, Jews don't have a right to establish a state in Eretz Israel. I'm always impressed by something that I heard from a Rav Avram Shapira Tzulangiyahun. In 1920, the League of Nations approved the British mandate to set up a homeland for the Jewish people in Eretz Israel at a conference that was held in San Remo. I think San Remo, where was it? Someplace in Italy? I should know. Anyway, the Rav Meir Simcha, the Meshech Chochma, then wrote the following. And now that the enlightened nations of the world have given their permission that Eretz Israel should be the homeland for the Jewish people, writes three words. Sor Pachad Hashvuos. The fear of the oaths is removed. No more. The moment that we are granted permission by the nation of the world, there's no more fear of the Shavuos. So Rav Avram Shapira said on this statement of Rav Meir Simcha, he said the following. You should know we're taught that we have to listen to Gedolim. Gedolei Yisrael say something, we have to listen to them. So he says, you should know, not only do we have to listen to Gedolei Yisrael have to listen to Gedolei Yisrael. And if Rav Meir Simcha HaKohen Medvinsk, who was the giant of the time, and one of the giants of the 20th century, says, Sor, Pachad, Hashvuas, the fear of the Shavuos is gone, then it's gone. Then it's gone. That cannot ever again be raised as a reason not to go on Aliyah, or to be opposed to the establishment of the state. Okay. There's a great deal more, but I'm just giving you the main points. All right? Umash Omar HaRamban. And what the Ramban said, remember, he's responding to the fact that the Ramban says, Nachmanides says that there's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, and the Ramban didn't list it. So he says, Umash Omar HaRamban, what the Ramban said, Shachachom Amamu, that our wise men said, Ki kibush ha'aretz hi milchemet mitzvah. The Gemara says that conquering Eretz Yisrael is milchemet mitzvah. It's a war that is a mitzvah to wage. So he says, Zehu kasher lo nihiyem shubadim lo umot. That's only when we are not under the heel of the nations of the world. But remember, we already pointed out, but we were given permission to take possession of it and by the nations of the world. Umash omar, Od shachachomim hifligu b'shevach dirat ha'aretz. The Ramban says, listen, there are so many statements of our rabbi. many of them that were quoted by Rabbi Yehuda Levi in the Kuzri that talk in such grand terms about the praise of Eretz Yisrael. So the Megillat Esther says that doesn't apply in all times. That's dafke bizman shebet hamikdash kayam. Only when the Bet HaMikdash exists, aval achshav, ein mitzvah ladobar, now there's no mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. V'chein pirshu ha-taisis shav, that's what Taisis said, that's the Taisis up here. He quotes Rabbeinu Chaim, and we took care of Rabbeinu Chaim already. The Taisis, gabihu omer lalos, when he says, let's go on Aliyah, or she says, let's go on Aliyah. V'od chayi she'ein bo mitzvah, another proof that there's no mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara there in Ksuba says the following in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, Kol ha'ole mibavol le'eretz Yisrael over ba'aseh. Listen to this. This is a statement of the Gemara. You have to understand this. It's Rabbi Yehuda who says, Kol ha'ole mibavol le'eretz Yisrael, whoever goes on aliyah from Bavol to Eretz Yisrael over ba'aseh, transgresses a positive commandment. What positive commandment? So he quotes a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Bovela yuvo'u, they shall be brought to Babylon, v'shoma yihyu, and there they shall be. Bovela yuvo'u, v'shoma yihyu, and there they shall be. By the way, ad yom pogdi, until the day that I remember them. So now, quite a statement by Rabbi Yehuda. By the way, who made the statement about the three oaths? The three oaths I had mentioned was Reb Zeira. I think I once told you, my mother-in-law, Allah Shalom, wanted to know whatever she could find out about Reb Zeira. Why did she want to know about Reb Zeira? No, we're not related to Reb Zeira. No, we're not related. Reb Zeira was a student of Rabbi Yehuda. And he lived in Bavel. The Gemara there says that Rabbi Zeira decided he wants to go on Aliyah, so he stayed out of his Rebbe's way because he was afraid that his Rebbe would tell him, Kol ha'ole mibavel Eretz Yisrael, whoever goes from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael transgresses a positive commandment. And despite that, the Gemara talks about Rabbi Zeira's Aliyah three or four times in Shas. He went on Aliyah. He went on Aliyah. I remember when I wanted to go on Aliyah, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe told me not to. So I remember asking then Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, what should I do? I want to go on Aliyah. And the Rebbe says I shouldn't. So there was a whole discussion until finally he agreed that you can go. He tells me I can go. But told me if you're going to write another letter to the Rebbe and ask him whether you can go on Aliyah. And the Rebbe says no. So he says, don't you ever dream of setting foot in Eretz Yisrael. Because you can't enter into debate with Gedolei Yisrael. If a second time the Rebbe says no, don't you dare go. So I remember asking Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky then, listen, Reb Zeira's Rebbe said not to go on Aliyah. Reb Zeira knew that his Rebbe holds you shouldn't go on Aliyah. But despite that, he went on Aliyah. So he smiled and he looked at me and he said, Rav Zeira given a gresser echachem vidi, he was smarter than you. He didn't ask his Rebbe. So my mother-in-law always wanted to know, and when Rav Zeira went on Aliyah, was he successful? Did he have a successful Aliyah? Interesting is, who is the one that tells us about the three oaths? Reb Zeira. And despite the fact that he tells us about the three oaths, he went on Aliyah. Obviously, how do we understand Reb Zeira? Because the oaths spoke about Israel en masse going on Aliyah. But individuals can always go. And therefore, Reb Zeira went Aliyah. What are we going to do with Reb Yehuda? There's a serious problem with Reb Yehuda. When Yirmiyahu said, Bovelo yuvo'u, to Bovel they should come, v'shama yiyu, and there they shall be, the Gemara itself explains, what's Rabbi Zeira going to do with that pasuk? His Rebbe says, don't go on Aliyah, because Yirmiyahu said, don't go. Bavelo Yuvo, they should be brought to Bavel, and there they shall be. Sadr Bzeriko. So the Gemara says, and all you have to do is just open up a Tanakh, and you'll see clearly. You know what Yirmiyahu was talking about? Clay Beit Hamikdash. The vessels of the Beit Hamikdash will be brought to Bavel, and there they will be. And you know what? There's going to come a time when a fellow called Ahasuerus is going to take out the clay Beit Hamikdash, and they're going to drink from them. So then the question is, Rabbi Yehuda didn't know the simple meaning of the Pasuk. Any child who learns the Pasuk knows that it's not talking about people. And then you get the impression that Rabbi Yehuda must be a Natura Karatanik. In other words, anybody who can say that if you go from Bavel to Eretz Yisroel, you're over Basay, you transgress a positive commandment of Ark. So you have to know Rav Kook. I saw once Rav Kook says such a beautiful, beautiful pshat to Rabbi Yehuda. It's unbelievable. Because I happen to be learning Masech the Brachas now. And in Masech the Brachas, you know, they're going through what brachas do you make on different foods. So there's a Gemara that says certain kinds of food that grow in fruit that grows in Eretz Yisrael. So the Chachamim say you make borei pri ha'etz. Rabbi Yehuda says borei pri arzenu. Blessed is the fruit of our land. So the Gemara says, don't ask me questions from Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is different. The Chaviv Olei Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is beloved to Rabbi Yehuda. God, what are you going to do? The same person to whom Eretz Yisrael is beloved, and therefore fruit that grows in Eretz Yisrael, he said that you make a bracha, Borei Pri Arzenu. Boy, that would be real Zionistic, right? That would be great. Because Chaviv Olei, the Gemara says, don't bother me with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda is such a Zionist. What can you do? He loves Eretz Yisrael. And we make the bracha borei pri ha'etz. But he's the one who says that you're not allowed to go from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. He's the one who Rav Zeris stayed out of his way because he knew what his Rebbe held. So Rav Kook, I saw, wrote the following. Rabbi Yehuda, love of Eretz Yisrael was that great that he was not ready to go himself on Aliyah. You know what he wanted? He wanted to force God's hand. He wanted to make sure that not a single Jew was going to go to Eretz Yisrael. He wanted to storm the gates of heaven and say, Rabbeinu Shalom, if you're not going to take us back, we're staying here. It's all over. We want you to take us back en masse. Rabbi Yehuda didn't... He was afraid that if there would be trickles of people going, this one going, that one going, who knows how many Jews would be left and lost out in the Gola. He wanted to create, so to speak, a pressure on the Rabbeinu Shalom. By the way, he wasn't the first one that tried pressuring the Rabbeinu Shalom. It may sound strange, but I'll give you an example. It says that when Paro decreed that any child, that any son, male that's going to be born, should be thrown into the Nile. So Amram went ahead and he divorced his wife Yocheved. So many of the Gedolei Yisrael, from Yidden, went ahead and they divorced their wives. What kind of a response is that? What's Amram doing? I mean, then ultimately, of course, it is his daughter who comes to him and says, you're worse than Paro. Paro has only decreed that Jewish boys will be killed, but there aren't going to be Jewish girls either because of you. So I saw somebody who once said, you know what Amram had in mind? He was going to storm the gates of heaven. Rabbeinu Shalom, you want to have a Klal Yisrael? You know what I'm going to do? There won't be a Klal Yisrael until you redeem us. We're not going to have any children. This is going to be the last generation. No more Jews unless you redeem us. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to storm God. You know what? In a sense, he's saying, God, if we want to, we can have you over a barrel. you need us as much as we need you. We're going to stop having children. That's it. No Klal Yisrael. Fact is, there's a place where the Gemara says that following the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, there were the Aveli Tzion, those who mourned for Zion, and they said, Yom Shechorav Beit HaMikdash, from the day that the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Dinhu, you know what we should, Nigzor Al Atzmenu, we should decree, Lo Lisa Isha, not to marry, V'lo L'holid Banim, and not to have children, V'zaro Shel Avram Avinu, and the seed of Avram Avinu, Kola Mei Eleim, will come to an end by itself. What was the pshat? The pshat is that this was a challenge to God on high. That's what Rabbi Yehuda Rav Cook is saying, that Rabbi Yehuda wanted to make sure nobody, no Jews in Eretz Yisrael. Let's see how you like that, God. Let's see how you like that. What he wanted was to force the very heavens to bring all of Klal Yisrael back. Otherwise, there's simply no way to understand the one who says, if you go from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, you're over at Aseh, and he brings a pasuk that's not talking about people that could not have meant what he said it meant. And he knew the pasuk as well as anybody else. And certainly a Rabbi Yehuda who says that you should make a bracha on the fruits of Eretz Yisrael, Bodei Pri Arzeinu, and the Gemara says, don't tell me about Rabbi Yehuda, he's a big Zionist, he's a big Oif Eretz Yisrael. It was his Avas Eretz Yisrael that said, no, we're not going. We're not going. We want you to take us. We want you to take us all. We want you to fulfill the promise of the Nevi'im. If there'll be one in a city here, there, I'm going to bring you back from all four corners of the world. All right, wait a minute. I have another few minutes. What's the Megillat Esther saying? Rabbi Yehuda says that anybody who goes from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael transgresses a commandment, because Yirmiyahu said to Bavel they should come and there they should be. And how does Rabbi Yehuda understand it? That it's talking about people. It's talking about people. So the Megillat Esther says correctly, if there's a mitzvah in HaTorah to live in Eretz Yisrael, how could Yirmiyahu negate and reject that mitzvah? How can a Navi come and say that a positive commandment of the Torah doesn't exist? You know how we can do it? If you hold that there is no mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, then Yirmiyahu can say, Bavel o yuvo v'shoma yivu, they shall come to Bavel and be there. But of course, our understanding of Rabbi Yehuda and the pasuk in Yirmiyahu is completely different. If there was a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael at all times, how does a prophet who comes after Moshe contradict his words? A prophet doesn't have the right to create a new mitzvah. The Holstein listor, certainly a prophet doesn't have the right to contradict the mitzvah. The last paragraph from here to the end of the paragraph is his final comment, and in Yitz Hashem, that final comment will do next week, because you're going to need another shtickle little zeroxel of a fascinating statement of the rabbis. Okay, so what we have left to do after this is indeed explain, why doesn't the Rambam list the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael? Good question. Good question.
Yes.
Okay, I'll take care of it. Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Oh boy. Thanks a lot.
And Rambam doesn't.
Yes.
Okay.
Just tell me what to do. So, of course, there are mitzvahs that the Rambam lists that the Rambam doesn't. That's the whole sefer.